We're back with political novelist and attorney Ken Ead and business consultant, talk show host of Business Game Changers, Sarah Westall, discussing the 2015-2016 presidential campaigns. Before the break, we were remarking how popular Sanders and Trump are for taking on the establishment. I, like Sarah and Ken, feel this is the result of the American people feeling that they are being pushed against the wall. How would you describe this point in time, Ken?
This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms, or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
When you come to a point like that in big societies, big governments, you know, like the United States, revolution is what happens. Revolution is what will undo everything. When people think they're getting screwed, they don't take it anymore. And that's what's going to happen if we don't do something.
Well, and there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of people that are unhappy with where it's going, and people on all sides of the spectrum, as far as they just want things to be fair. They don't want the fraud. They want, you know, people who are into free market, you know, more libertarian view sense, they don't like the fraud either. People who are more socialist, who want government, they don't want the fraud either. Nobody wants the fraud and the controls that are in place. They want innovation. They want people to be able to, you know, they want human beings and our things. We want to be able to evolve and to be able to take, you know, take hold of all this new stuff that's coming out, and we're being held back because of the fraud and the corruption.
So maybe, Sarah, maybe it's a good thing that people are becoming more interested in listening to these debates, you know, and discussing these issues, because now with the tools that we're talking about on the internet, you can go and you can see how your congressman votes on something. And if you disagree, you can call them, you can email them, you can vote them out, you can organize, and you know, I think it's the start of something that could be good.
I think
it is. I agree.
Even with Trump, because Trump brings up a lot of important points.
Yep.
And we'll get to more of them.
He does, but I just...
Not important policies, important points.
Yeah, points.
Well,
yeah.
You guys do know that the opposition to Trump are planting, you know, some of the real radical people are actually planted by the Democratic side. And so, you know, the politics behind the scenes are really brutal. I mean, you know, Trump is just more in your face, but I, you know, as far as what they're doing behind the scenes, it's not cleaner and nicer.
No, it's not. And you know, and if you listen to someone who I really respect, like Jimmy Carter, he says, you know, if you listen to Governor Lindsey, he says, well, between Trump and Cruz, it's like, what would you rather do, be shot or take poison? You know,
well, I heard somebody have posted, what STD would you rather have?
Exactly. But if you listen to someone like Carter, who says, well, you know, Cruz was really too extreme, so I'd take Trump. If you listen to someone like that, who has a head on his shoulders and knows what he's talking about, and who's been in the trenches and who's had, you know, the whole system against him and had to rail against it, it's quite a thing. But I mean, the guy is just too game show host for me. He doesn't sound like a president. I think a president really doesn't do everything himself. He has a whole team of people that does everything. But he's the spokesman. He has to sound like a president. He's the one that goes and talks to the kings and the queens and the prime ministers of other countries. He can't be telling people, you know, to their face that they're a bunch of assholes and we're going to keep a wall against them or whatever.
He can't go do tea time with the queen behaving like that.
No, he can't. And he's got to go talk to the, you know, king of Saudi Arabia, you know, and you know, we know there's a whole bunch of stuff going on behind the scenes, and can't be telling him like it is to his face, because it's just not going to work in the rule of international relations. I mean,
well, yeah,
unless he wants to bring the army with him everywhere he goes.
I listened to his daughter talk. She's doing a lot of his campaign management, and she's very articulate and very she's very good. And
well, she'll probably be in his cabinet.
Well, yeah, who knows? But I was really surprised. You know, when you listen to his children talk and you listen to the people around him, they're really level-headed. So you wonder, and then somebody was trying to dig up trash on him, and they can't find much trash on him.
Listen to him, and
I agree, but my point is they tried to, like, all the people he went to high school with and stuff, everyone said positive things about him, like he was a good guy. And so you wonder, you know, what the heck? And then
he just doesn't know what he's talking about. I mean, he's talking about putting nuclear weapons on the Southeast Asian islands.
In Japan. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, a lot of that is. But, you know, but when you look at what some of these other campaigns are doing behind the scenes, it's just as bad. It's just not.
It's always been. Yeah. They're hiding it. They're sneaky about it.
Yes. And so that's what you have to realize, that, okay, this is all. The only person I think, and I don't agree with his policies at all, the only person I think that's actually a good guy is Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
But I don't know if I agree with. I don't think he has the business, you know, background. I'm a business person, right? And I see that you have to. I mean, when you're talking about a $1 trillion budget and you're running a country, you have to be able to understand those elements. So I don't think he has that. However, he is very sincere and a good person, and maybe that's what you look for. I don't know.
He's been in government, you know. But, you know, I agree. I think that government needs more of a business approach. I don't think there's anyone in our national government, in the top of tiers of it anyway, who really can do any of that. I think they're all serving their own interests. I mean, basically. So, you know.
We need more people like that. Well, we really do. Instead of having, you know, I know there's attorneys out there listening to the show, but you can't just have attorneys running our country. You have to have people from the business sectors.
Yeah, we don't use the correct side of our brain.
The thing is, I can't balance a checkbook.
I'm an attorney, but I can't balance a checkbook. We need accountants in there, man. You got to get those accountants in there.
Well, I'd like to turn to an aspect of things that is directly connected with business. Which is trade agreements. I think it's true that where Sanders and Trump both agree is that these trade agreements have been disastrous. I don't particularly feel like there's an easy answer, but let's just listen to what Perot said in 1992 when he brought this up before it became so obvious.
The candidates will have an opportunity to make a closing statement. So, President Bush, I think you said it earlier, let's get it on.
Let's go.
And I think the first question is over here.
Yes, I'd like to direct my question to Mr. Perot. What will you do as president to open foreign markets to fair competition from American business and to stop unfair competition here at home from foreign countries so that we can bring jobs back to the United States?
That's right at the top of my agenda. We've shipped millions of jobs overseas, and we have a strange situation because we have a process in Washington where after you've served for a while, you cash in, become a foreign lobbyist, make $30,000 a month, then take a leave, work on presidential campaigns, make sure you got good contacts, and then go back out. Now, if you just want to get down to brass tacks, first thing you ought to do is get all these folks who've got these one-way trade agreements that we've negotiated over the years, and say, fellas, we'll take the same deal we gave you. And they'll gridlock right at that point. Because, for example, we've got international competitors who simply could not unload their cars off the ships if they had to comply. You see, if it was a two-way street, just couldn't do it. We have got to stop sending jobs overseas. To those of you in the audience who are business people, pretty simple. If you're paying $12, $13, $14 an hour for factory workers, and you can move your factory south of the border, pay a dollar an hour for labor, hire a young 25, that's assume you've been in business for a long time, you've got a mature workforce. pay a dollar an hour for your labor, have no health care, that's the most expensive single element making a car, have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement, and you don't care about anything but making money, there will be a giant sucking sound going south. So if the people send me to Washington, the first thing I'll do is study that 2,000-page agreement and make sure it's a two-way street. One last point here. I decided I was dumb and didn't understand it, so I called a who's who of the folks who've been around it. And I said, why won't everybody go south? They said, we'll be disruptive. I said, for how long? I finally got them up for 12 to 15 years. And I said, well, how does it stop being disruptive? And that is when their jobs come up from $1 an hour to $6 an hour and ours go down to $6 an hour, then it's leveled again. But in the meantime, you've wrecked the country with these kinds of deals. We've got to cut it out.
Thank you, Mr. Perot.
Well, I think that's pretty much close to what we've been talking about, needing some business people, right?
Well, yeah, it's obvious that he knew what business people will do. He knows the motivations. And it's because that's what business people are charged to do. But if you get them in government and they're charged to do something else, like take care of our country, they're going to see that's a bad deal.
Yeah.
I think it's not a black and white situation of how how NAFTA affected the country. You know, but on one hand, factories have closed down, moved overseas, and that's hurt communities, you know, in the Rust Belt. On the other hand, I mean, the companies are going international. We basically have a world economy now, and they were moving in that direction anyway. And we've got to compete with other companies in other countries who are going to make products cheaper. The thing is, we do everything by cronyism and special interests, and we've got certain principles we have to live by. I don't want to take clothes that have been made by child labor. There's principles that we have to maintain, that in negotiating these agreements, there has to be those certain principles, but that's all thrown out the window when the cronies are doing it.
That's the problem, is getting people who are just ethical in there. I mean, how do we get people that are going to be doing things for the right reason? But the problem is, if they don't do things for the right reason, then the corporate, you know, the fascist state takes you out.
Takes over. But the thing is that the solution is not putting tariffs on imported goods. That's just going to make prices go up for average consumer. And that's just going to make, Joe Blow's market budget higher when he goes to buy things he has to buy.
But how do you deal with it then? Because you have to do something. Then maybe you put laws in place. If you are doing these kinds of practices, we won't buy from you. I don't know.
I think it's complicated,
but when you negotiate these agreements, you have to put certain provisions in them, like any other contract. You know, and these are the things that have to be respected. These are the absolute minimums that we're going to have to watch, and there are certain things that have to be in there to prevent that.
I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Aaron for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had 2 seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com.
Back on Threshold with Ken Eade and Sarah Westall.
Ken was saying how, in order to try and find some fairness in trade agreements, we need to put in place some criteria to prevent us from exploiting foreign labor. Well, I think you have to be concerned about these other countries. And maybe you have to protect yourself. Maybe you even have to do something like tariffs to some degree. But you have to be concerned about other countries just for the sake of caring about...
Yeah, how are we going to do that, Johnny? Nobody really cares about anyone but themselves, basically. Well, I mean, we are part of a unit, a local unit in our local area, right? And then we're part of a national unit in our national area. But what do we really know or care about other countries? We really don't. So we have to really care about the principle.
You're not really speaking about yourself, though.
No, of course not. I'm just talking about people collectively as a whole. I mean, we're concerned about what we have to pay when we go to the grocery store, what we have to pay when we go to buy a car. You know, it's important. That's number one, because we have to take care of our families. But there's certain principles that we have to remember and adhere to. And I think if we keep those in mind, the people that negotiate these agreements have to do that in our name. And they're not doing that.
Well, I think actually, you know, you need, in this case, a kind of more global paradigm in order to really solve some of these problems. Because right now, for instance, we're having all these currency wars. Okay. And so mm-hmm. we're inflating our money. The government is inflating our money so that they can pay down their debt much easier, which is one of the reasons you allow inflation to take place. You want to control it. Of course, it can affect eventually the domestic situation radically. It's very complicated, but the point is, it is because everyone's thinking of themselves, and it's because what we have in the various countries are people who are in charge who are very much like the people in our country who are in charge. They're thinking of themselves first. But I do want to play something by Trump on that parallels Perot to show that Trump really is dealing with a problem, if not any kind of solution. So can I play this?
Yeah.
All this free trade, you know what? It's free trade for them, not free trade for us. We're losing our shirts. And I think free trade's fine. But the leaders of these other countries, whether it's China, $500 billion a year trade deficit with China. What the hell good is that for us? Where does it help us? So you have China, you have Japan, where the cars come in by the hundreds of thousands. They pour off the boats. It's like Mark is driving the car. I've never seen, they come off, you wouldn't drive them. It's too reckless. They come off these boats going like 40 or 50 miles an hour. It's like the Long Island Turnpike or Long Island Expressway. They come pouring off the boats, one after another, and we send them, like, nothing. We send them nothing. And by comparison, nothing. We have to make smart deals. We can no longer, you know, we're losing. You look at our deficits. You look at our budget. You look at what's going on with this country. We're losing our jobs, and the politicians don't tell you that. I actually think a lot of them don't know. Most of them that do know, they're controlled by special interests that own companies in other countries. They're even controlled by other countries. You know, countries have lobbyists also. They have lobbyists. They have their donors. It's absolutely crazy what's going on with our country. And, you know, when you stand up and say, we're going to charge you tax, as an example carrier. So they announced 2 weeks ago, the guy standing is some management person. I don't think it was even the top guy. And he let 1,400 great people, and they had the cell phone going, great people let go. And I said, boy, that's sad. I'm watching on a television. I'm saying, that's sad. Now, folks, I was really a good student at the greatest school, the Wharton School of Finance, and you don't have to go to Wharton. You don't have to go to school. How does it help us to have Carrier go to Mexico, make their air conditioning units in Mexico, let go all of these people, great jobs, they've been there for many, many years, they're great people, beautiful units outside, great people, great stuff. I'm not buying it anymore. I'm not buying Carrier anymore. So they go to Mexico. And by the way, some countries that have pride, they don't buy like products if they're made in America. They want them built in their country. Remember, we used to have made in the USA, right? When was the last time you've seen it? You don't see that anymore.
I just think that what I hear him saying is, you know, he's criticizing these other countries. And it is really our fault because we don't have people like that, like he's talking about. These deals were not made. It's almost, you know, I don't want to.
They're smarter than we are. They made a good deal and we didn't.
Well, I don't necessarily. I almost think there's something
or
else.
Or a good product.
Well, a product, you know? Well, no, it's a good point. It's a good product at the price that we want to pay.
But
we cannot compete with people that are paying slave wages, you know.
Not on certain products. No.
You're right. On high tech stuff,
it's a different ball game. Yep.
Because they have to pay their people a lot too. Because once you start having competition when it comes to, you know, higher level thinking and things, mm-hmm. and that's probably our thing, is that we have to just realize that we're in a different market. We cannot compete at the low price, low quality, you know, products anymore. We're priced out of that market. And so we have to realize that we're not in that market anymore, and we have to revamp our manufacturing base to be in a different marketing sector.
And not only that, we have to revamp our education system to give the people the skills they need. I mean, basically, you can't come out of high school and get a good job anymore. I mean, we've got to rethink that, because we've got to put these people in the position where they can get those tech jobs.
Yeah, but how do we deal with the fact that there's going to be a certain percentage of people that might not be able to fit that type of work? I mean, we do have some serious issues.
We do, absolutely.
And I think that in certain cases, we do need to protect, you know, our goods. Maybe it's in the area of manufacturing clothes. Maybe we do have, because a lot of the manufacturing of clothes is using slave labor throughout the world. Maybe we
it isn't, and perhaps it can be done a lot cheaper than it's being done domestically. But I mean, it comes to free market again and pricing, and that's why clothes are coming from China. I mean,
but this is where paradigm changes happen. Okay, 3D printing and different types of manufacturing.
Yeah.
I mean, if we could you know, we can start automating our manufacturing and reducing our, because where a lot of the expenses coming in from China or Taiwan or whatever is the shipping. And so now if we can change our distribution channels and we can save costs on shipping and we can save costs on manufacturing, now you're just spending money on design and, you know, some of the service stuff, but we have close range distribution and it ends up being price competitive at that point. I mean, this is where we have to rethink how we do so. We have to use our technology and our innovation to rethink how our distribution channels work so that we can save that money. Plus, people can get things quicker. They can get it, you know, they can have the options to customize. I mean, sure, there's going to be certain products I don't care about customizing. I just want them as cheap as I could possibly get them. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's going to be a difference.
No, but that's a very wise comment, sir. I think that has to be done.
Well, yeah. for a second, let's hear just what Sanders has to say, since we heard from the other guys.
Senator Sanders, I just want to show the audience. You sent a tweet. I want to return to trade. You sent a tweet on Thursday. This is the tweet. I'm showing it to the viewers. It said, "The people of Detroit know the real cost of Hillary Clinton's free trade policies." It shows pictures of crumbling buildings. It seems like you're blaming her for the situation in Detroit.
I am blaming the trade policies. You know, this is an amazing thing, which I didn't know until recently. And I wonder how many people did know this.
But you're calling them Hillary Clinton's free trade policy.
Well, Hillary Clinton and everybody else who supported the Eastern trade policies, she wasn't alone. We had many, many Republicans and far too many Democrats who supported these disastrous trade policies. Do you know that in 1960, Detroit, Michigan was one of the wealthiest cities in America? Flint, Michigan was a prosperous city. But then what happened is corporate America said, why do I want to pay somebody in Michigan a living wage when I could pay slave wages in Mexico or China? We're going to shut down. We're going to move abroad. We're going to bring those products back into this country. Those trade policies, as much as any other set of policies, has resulted in the shrinking of the American middle class. And I'll tell you what else it did. It's not only job loss by the millions. It is the race to the bottom, so that new jobs in manufacturing, in some cases today, pay 50% less than they did 20 years ago. How stupid is that trade policy?
Well,
Interesting.
It's just, I think, oversimplifying the issue. I mean, he's got a point, but just like Donald on the one side saying made in the USA, made in the USA. I think, you know, what Sarah was talking about is that we have to realize we're in a world economy, that we are competing with other countries in the world that are producing things, and we have different ability to get in there and compete where the products are coming, where they're going to be coming from. And we have an advantage there, and we have to take advantage of that. And nobody's talking about that. They're just talking about, you know, minimum wages and made in the USA, and that's not, it's out of touch with the economic reality of the world economy.
Well, here's something. I go into a local supermarket here, and I see all these, these places where cashiers would normally operate. And then I see a self-service section, and there are at least 10 of these cashier units, right? Mm-hmm. And 9 of them are usually empty because they're using the automation. You know, they're encouraging people for the automation so they can make more money and not have to pay these workers. So when you come up with a solution that involves more automation, you also have to come up with a solution that includes people getting paid for something. So you have a lot
jobs are going to change, Johnny.
Right.
Yeah. See, I don't know. I the jobs go into making the automation and distributing the automation versus, being a cashier.
It's a runaway train. We're not going to stop it. We have to learn how to deal with it. You know, jobs are going to change. The way that people make money is going to change. But I mean, the consumers are going to have to pay for everything anyway. So we're all going to have to accommodate each other in the system, but things are going to have to change.
Some people have said that these trade agreements are deliberate, that they were deliberately downsizing the American economy so that they could have more of a global economy. And so these multinationals could work more efficiently for their own good.
That's no conspiracy theory for me.
But there's no doubt that international corporations want that. They don't.
They want to pay less money for production. Of course,
there's absolutely no doubt that that's going on to a certain degree. Because I mean, it's not even conspiracy theory. It's obvious because they're business people. They want to be able to serve the world because there's more of a market, and they want to be able to get the highest quality at the lowest prices. Period.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't get it in the United States, they're going to go somewhere else. And they don't see themselves as a citizen of the United States. They see themselves as a citizen of something else. I don't know, the world. And they don't really care about, I mean, I'm just being honest. They don't care.
Well, the problem is that these kinds of solutions also cut down on the ability of people to pay for products.
Absolutely.
And so I think that
the middle class is pretty important.
I think that
what's
happening here is that you have people who are so engrossed with their own sort of needs as corporation or as multinational, whatever. They don't look at the whole picture. And we need a kind of trade agreements that allow everybody to be prosperous.
Well, if you're representing the United States, then you got to make sure that if, for example, with China, what they do is they lower their currency, so it's hard to compete there. But then they also subsidize the industry so that industry can undercut our pricing, right?
Yeah,
we do that. We've done that too in agricultural fields where we've taken over whole industry sectors. I have a show that I did with John Perkins, and he explains, how we've done that to different sectors where we undercut, based on subsidies. And so when we identify that a country's doing that to us, I mean, those are the details that we have to pay attention to. We can't allow somebody to undercut us by that because they're going to take over our sector. And that's their strategy. We can't be that naive, and we have to be more astute in what we're doing.
Well, I definitely don't think we shouldn't have compromised our standard of living. Whatever solution we had shouldn't have produced this.
I think also we have to be responsible in negotiating these agreements where we're not bringing in dangerous foods, which we've seen that disastrous consequences of when that happens. We're not bringing in products that are produced by slave or child labor. And, this has to be something we put our foot down on.
Well, and in some ways our quality of life has gone up, and other ways it's gone down, right? We can get goods and things a lot cheaper. We can get certain things cheaper. Our healthcare, our education, our housing, that's all more expensive. Things that are really important are more expensive, but the average daily stuff is less expensive.
Well, let's turn a little bit to back to another favorite subject here. Though I'm not personally a fan of Donald Trump and his ideas, I admit to the guilty pleasure he's provided me with permitting the often somewhat staid platforms for running for high office to be virtually explosive treasure trove of the surprising and unexpected for even the most discerning viewer, and a magnet for television ratings that more than equals the best reality show, including The Apprentice. In my case, he has managed to tap emotions like horror, incredulity, shock, outrage, bewilderment, suspicion, panic, and revulsion. For others, to his credit and power, he has struck sensibilities threaded with gratitude, excitement, self-esteem, optimism, including a strong sense of moral and even ethnic superiority and a drive to succeed at any cost. And he's managed to spread his flamboyancy and controversy into all of the campaigns from all these candidates, especially the Democrats. Recently appeared on CNN Town Hall. I don't know if you guys saw this, with his family. Did you see him actually talk with his family, with Anderson Cooper?
No, I missed that one.
Well, I didn't.
Extremely friendly and lucid people. These people, like you were talking about his family before, respecting, supporting him. They made clear that his disposition and manner towards communicating with his family was quite different than his demeanor with other people. Yet, in many ways, Trump's a very smart problem solver and can be quite charming. But after this short break, we start to discuss foreign policy issues, which has stirred up a great deal of controversy, forcing his Republican and Democratic contenders to pay him a lot of attention. So let's hear something about one of his potential initiatives. Here's a famous initiative of him, which I'm going to play something about.
Donald Trump has finally given details as to how he proposes Mexico is to pay for that wall. Remember the wall? Remember when America was great? Remember Donald Trump wants to make America great again by building a wall and having Mexico pay for it? Well, finally, he's come up with his rationale and the economics behind it. And he's calling to hold Mexico to ransom. That's what he wants to do. He wants to make it illegal for Mexican immigrants to send back money to the families back in Mexico. The statistics are something like $25 billion every year is sent back in wire transfers from Mexican immigrants who live and work in this country back to their families back home. And he wants to make that illegal. He's citing a clause under the Patriot Act to do that. And he says that if I withhold the payment back, the wire transfer of that $25 billion back, and say to Mexico, you give us $8 to $10 billion to pay for the wall, and then we'll release the $25 billion that comes back into you. $25 billion accounts for about 2% of Mexico's GDP. He put all this together in a two-page memo that he put to one of the national publications. This is what he said specifically. He said it's an easy decision for Mexico. Make a one-time payment of $5 to $10 billion, nice narrow number there, to ensure that $24 billion continues to flow into their country year after year. This is untied under the memo, compelling Mexico to pay for the wall, and it's emblazoned with Make America Great Again, his logo and that slogan.
Now, here he's talking about how Mexico will pay for the wall. All these people are sending money to Mexico, $24 billion a year. Some of these people have come here and I worked in Coachella for a Spanish-speaking station, which was associated with a rock station.
And you didn't see all those billions going to Mexico, Johnny?
I saw people going and transferring money all the time. They are.
They're not going to pay for a wall.
These people are living on the edge of hardship, and yet they're sending money to their families. And one of the reasons they came here was so that they could send money to their parents or other family from even from a really bad state that they're in at the point where they themselves don't have the proper food, medical help, or a decent livable environment. But it's better than in Mexico, and they want to help their families. But of course, deporting them back would be a tremendous hardship. Now, cutting off all their money being sent home, it could be a terrible situation for these people. Here's a short clip of Your Kisses Never Die, written by myself as lyricist and Edgar Ahrens as composer, and sung by Patricia Welch for a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle.
We must have known. Out remorseful. trick of chance. We whirl around this windswept beach, entranced by love beyond our reach. Your kiss.
Before our short break, we were talking about Trump's idea of getting paid by Mexico for the wall at the border separating our countries. Well, what do you think of this idea of his idea for paying for the wall, Trump wall, by cutting off their income and blackmailing their, basically blackmailing their government?
So stealing from them, basically?
Well, you can't do that.
No.
My husband's from Mexico. He moved here when he was 10, and my whole side of the family, his whole side of the family is from Mexico. My kids are Mexican. So I have a little bit of insight into some of this stuff. But there are some major, major, major issues with that border and drugs and violence and things going on. As far as forcing them to pay for a wall, I mean, that's ridiculous.
I don't think there's any legal way to do it.
As my husband says, there are some back end ways that you could get them to do it. They're just not going to ever
legally.
Do it. You could do it in some trade agreements and stuff, but they're never going to do it openly in public because they're going to say nobody's going to admit to doing it. It's ridiculous. I don't even know what he's trying to get. It's some marketing tactic he's trying to do.
Or he's just absolutely doesn't care about other people. I don't know if that's possible because he's a very good family man.
Yeah, well, when it came to the
Muslims, he cares about his family then, but he doesn't. I mean, the way he talks about the Mexicans and the Muslims, it doesn't sound like he cares for anyone other than the WASP America.
When he was talking about the Muslims originally, he was saying that we needed to let them in because it's a humanitarian crisis. And then he got slammed for it and so forth. And then he came back and said, well, we need to, figure out the situation first before you let people in.
Yeah.
And so,
he's
shifted based on what the politics of the day was, but everybody does.
Well, I want to go back to the border closing. It's not an exclusive property of Donald Trump. I've just watched a video from the National Association of Border Patrol Officers. In it, Zach Taylor, the chairman of this organization, whose acronym is NAB Pro, it's NABPO, and it's designated, and he's also their designated border security expert, describes how much of the border is technically federal lands and how the Border Patrol is prohibited from securing these areas, leaving wide open corridors for criminals involved in drugs and illegal alien smuggling to operate. 62% of this land at the border has unfettered access to private and state property. In 2010 to 11, the Tucson sector of the Border Patrol stated they were apprehending approximately 3% of illegal aliens they know to have entered. Recently, the claims and concerns about illegal border entry is mounting, with the allegations that Middle Eastern terrorists have been able and will continue to be able to penetrate the borders. I'm not able to validate these concerns at this point. What's your opinion? What do you think? Are our borders open corridors to crime and terrorism? Is there truth to the dangers to national security and safety and what we should do about it? How extremely important is this, or is it just mostly talk?
I think if there's a sophisticated terrorist group, they're going to get in anyways. I don't know if, they could go in through Canada and other areas, I suppose, if you really wanted to get through. But
they could come in through any port of call, actually, Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to prevent them from coming
in.
They've been trying to prevent terrorism at the airport, but basically it's, you know, I don't know how effective that's been. They'd like to cite cases where they potentially saved us from this or that, but I don't know how true they are.
I don't think that that would, you know, what's being done there is what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about people coming into this country. And
well, I think what's happened, you know, I went through Canada's border with a group of young girls. They're all like 11, 12 years old, this hockey team. And I couldn't believe how abusive and how rude the United States border agents treated us as we were coming back into the country.
Every time, Sarah, I live in Europe, and every time I come to the States, I feel like a criminal, and I'm a citizen. And, you know, my wife's a Russian citizen, but we're married. So she comes through the regular citizen line with me. And sometimes it takes, they let me through, and sometimes it takes 3 hours to get her through. So, you know, I always feel like you come in with a group of foreigners like Germans or whatever, you come in on Lufthansa and you feel like they're going to put y'all in the gas chamber.
Yeah, it is really terrible. The Canadians were very kind and friendly, and they were welcoming us into the country. And then we came back over the border to come here, and I was ready to, you know, complain somewhere because I couldn't believe how awful they treated us and how, you know, we had these 11, 12, some of the girls were just treated so awful. I just, you know, they have this abuse of power. I don't know what to tell you. I was ashamed that this was our country and we were all American citizens. There wasn't any of us that weren't. And they were a bunch of little girls.
Yeah.
Well, they're actually, searching toddlers and I've seen.
Well, okay, you can search a toddler and do it in a friendly, respectful manner. These guys
without scaring the hell out of them, but they don't do that.
No.
Well, let's go on more with some accounts of what's going on at the borders from other perspectives. Here's one.
Nearly 9 years after 9/11, the United States is still facing a major terror threat. You may be surprised to learn who agents are catching trying to cross the border from Mexico. We reviewed congressional reports and traveled to the Southwest to find a threat that affects us here in Metro Atlanta. The Border Patrol uses choppers, ATVs, and horses to patrol the 2,000-mile Southwest border. Most of the illegals caught crossing are from Mexico or South America, but thousands are classified as OTMs, other than Mexicans, including hundreds from nations that sponsor terror. These are the records we obtained at this federal detention center near Phoenix, Arizona. We found illegals from Afghanistan, Egypt, Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, Sudan, and Yemen in custody.
We have left the back door to the United States open.
Former Arizona Congressman J.D. Hayworth has seen the intelligence reports.
And we have to understand that there are people who definitely mean to do us harm who have crossed that border.
This Arizona rancher doesn't want to be identified because he fears the Mexican cartels who smuggle drugs and people near his property. This Muslim prayer rug was found on his ranch.
It's just one more indicator that there's a whole lot more than just a few poor Mexicans coming into the United States.
There's more. This congressional report on border threats confirms members of Hezbollah have crossed the Southwest border. It also contains photos of military jackets found on the border. The Arab insignia reads, "Martyr, Way to Eternal Life." The other depicts a plane crashing into the Twin Towers.
I mean, there's no doubt that there's a multitude of problems, but I'm not sure that raising a panic level is going to solve any of those problems.
I do think that we need to really carefully vet who comes into this country.
And I agree.
And the way that we're doing it, you know, in airports and so forth is kind of absurd. But I do think there needs to be a way to do this. And we're probably going to need a lot more people to do it if we're going to do it properly. If we're going to have people coming over, I am completely against banning Muslims or something like that. But I'm not against careful vetting of people. And there's some people that we can't vet. We won't be able to vet them, and we're going to have to keep them out. Maybe have them in safe zones somewhere or do something to help them. But we don't have the right to just have an open situation. And I am totally against deporting these people, but I am totally against just keeping these open borders this way. Now, here's another example of something that's amazing. Later in 2014, the last thing I played you was about 2010. where he was talking about the Twin Towers and people coming in from all these different countries. Later in 2010, a massive number of children without their parents were let into this country, taking up allegedly a great deal of time away from border guards directing the border. Further, there are claims that there are terrorists, perhaps connected with ISIS, making deals with drug cartels to get into the United States. Terrorists and drug cartels. In this clip from Charles Walton, he discusses the 2014 projections and that say that maybe as much as 60 to 80,000 people could come across the border.
Because of this, you know, these agents are, you know, they're changing the diapers, they're feeding kids, and they're doing all these things and they can't keep up with it, you know, and then they're having to deal with the disease and the scabies and all this stuff. So they can't patrol our borders properly. And so that leaves the door open to terrorists coming in, drug cartel, drugs, you name it, you know. It just opens a door for opportunity for this to go on. And now there's a new border risk. Apparently ISIS, you know, the horrible terrorist group that we know is, you know, heading towards Baghdad and just killing all these innocent people and rob bank for something like $400 and something million. I mean, this crazy terrorist evil group that even Al-Qaeda says is evil considered by them. This is how bad they are. Well, now, apparently this horrible ISIS terrorist group has ties to Mexican drug lords. So, think about that. Is this some big plan, you know? I don't know.
This is Johnny Bluestar. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welch for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for great entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welch. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy.
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelch.com/CD. That is patriciawelch.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
Prior to the break, we were talking about multiple people, often improperly vetted, coming through our border. What do you think of that?
I just don't know. I mean, if you're talking about ISIS, they're pretty organized. They've got money. They don't need to sneak someone across the border. They could follow the proper channels and smuggle people in to have legitimate papers. I mean, that's basically how the 9/11 terrorists got in. And like Sarah said, if they're going to get in, they're going to get in. There's nothing we can do about it. We can be more vigilant about keeping, you know, the bad people out. But if they're terribly organized like ISIS is, there's going to be a way to do it.
I saw an interesting account by the person who handled a lot of these terrorists, who was the visa agency in this Middle Eastern mm-hmm. country. And what he said was that these people were let in. He wasn't allowed to really vet them properly. They were just pushed
that's what I'm talking about. That's if there's bribes being given to get a visa, and these people are coming in with legitimate papers, then that's where you have to solve the problem, not by putting more machine guns along the border, because the people are just coming in through regular ports of call with legitimate papers, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it except ask them questions.
We have so much corruption at every level, and if there's bribery going on, and they can just buy stuff off. There needs to be an overhaul of a lot of things.
Yeah.
a giant paradigm shift.
Exactly, Johnny, exactly.
And that is a real serious...
I mean, we can't have a war on this and a war on that. We have to have a war on our own corruption is basically what we've got to do. If we're so fond of doing wars on things, we have to have a war against our own corruption.
That's a great... I mean, that's perfectly well stated.
I think we need a citizen rights foundation. Anyway, getting back to what we were talking about, let's go to the big one, the famous one. Just to hear his voice again.
Shall I read you the statement? Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. We have no choice. We have no choice. Mr. Trump stated, without looking at the various polling data, it's obvious to anybody the hatred is beyond comprehension of such a big portion. Where the hatred comes from and why, we'll have to determine. We're going to have to figure it out. We have to figure it out. We can't live like this. It's going to get worse and worse. You're going to have more World Trade Centers. It's going to get worse and worse, folks. We can be politically correct and we can be stupid, but it's going to get worse and worse. Folks, those days are over. Those days are over. We have to be tough. We have to be smart. We have to be vigilant. Yes, we have to look at mosques, and we have to respect mosques. But yes, we have to look at mosques. We have no choice. We have to see what's happening. Because something is happening in there. Man, there's anger. There's anger. And we have to know about it. We can't be these people that are sitting back like in the World Trade Center, like so many different things. We can't be people that knew what was going on 2 weeks ago in California. Probably for months they knew what was going on, and they didn't want to tell anybody. We can't be that. We have to be strong. When we see violations, you have to report those violations, and quickly. You don't worry about profiling. I promise I will defend you from profiling. I promise.
I have chosen to end this program with this last quote from Trump. A proposal that in itself dilutes in my mind the value and feasibility of a campaign that prizes its ability to create real change through new or revitalized political paradigms. To me, this proposal is like Abu Ghraib, sending a signal to disaffected Muslims that the United States is not like Islam, creating a further terrorist recruiting tool based on a distortion of the real sentiments of most Americans and their politicians. Secondly, how could we ask our Islamic brothers to fight with us against our mutual enemies if we disdain them so much? Thirdly, how can Donald Trump expect to be a third-party negotiator with Israel and the Palestinians, which he claims he could be, possibly, even though he says this is the toughest deal to negotiate ever? I think he has canceled out his credibility for this negotiation, as well as alienating Muslims in America, the fourth problem. Muslims in America who love and cherish this country are among the best defense against domestic terrorism. Of course, as campaigns go, this proposal of banning Muslims from coming to America was a long time ago. Most recently, annoyed by our expenditures on defending foreign countries, he has called for arming South Korea and Japan with nuclear arms, a further descent into political surrealism. I would like to thank Ken Ead and Sarah Westall for their participation. The biggest problem that I see is what Ken and Sarah talked about, the deadly corruption that lies behind all our efforts for real change. We need an informed and enlightened citizenry to lead the way to create the foundations for real government that represents the true needs of America and planet Earth. And to this end, I ask my audience if they wish to join with me in prayer for the true blessings of liberty, democracy, prosperity, and freedom for all of us. See you next on Threshold.